episode 9 of Life Without Consequence. My name is Davey Francis. I am your host, narrator, and your author. We are elbow deep into the second arc of Life Without Consequence, and I imagine that you, the listener, have some questions. I do have to be honest with you, though. I have zero intent of answering any of those questions here in this introduction. Let's recap. Parker and Benj have apparently traveled backwards in time and found themselves in Cleveland, Ohio, in the year of our Lord, 2023. Their teleporter is broken, and their only lifeline is an admittedly sketchy guy named Tucker. And Tucker's got his own problems. During an assault at the hands of his ex-girlfriend's new boyfriend, an unstable policeman named Brendan, Tucker decided to steal the crooked cop's phone and wallet. This action has made things dangerously unpleasant for his ex. Did I mention that her name is Nina? And that she bears a striking resemblance to Parker's Nina? Parker and Benj are blissfully unaware of these suspiciously coincidental facts, but with these two stories colliding, it won't stay that way for long, and there's no telling how Parker might react. Things have gotten weird, and they only show signs of getting weirder. I just don't think you're ready for how weird the next few episodes are gonna be. I'm being so serious. Everything is about to get so fucked up. Before we get back into the story, I want to thank my Patreon producers, Hampus, Andrew McGuire, and a new producer, Cole Biffle. You guys are the best. Thank you. The producer tier is available at patreon.com/DaveyFrancis, where you can get episodes of this show 2 weeks before they hit the main podcast feeds. I think we've probably heard enough out of me. Let's throw it over to me and get back into the story. Welcome to Life Without Consequence. Chapter 29. Nina focused on her breath, slowly drawing it inside of her and holding it for 1, 2, then exhale. Careful, controlled, and without at all giving away that she was completely and utterly terrified. There wasn't a single person who knew Nina who would have disagreed that she was tough. In second grade, while all the other little girls were going to dance class, Nina had been adamant about taking Taekwondo, and her interest in combat sports had only grown as she grew older. At 16 years old, she'd not only saved herself from an assault at the hands of a much older man, but she'd also put the man in hospital, breaking his arm in several places. There was no doubt about her ability to defend herself, but the strength Brendan had displayed, the ease in which he'd been able to overcome her, was like nothing she'd ever experienced. Not only was she racked with fear, but Nina was also overcome with confusion. She didn't understand how things had escalated into something so unpleasant overnight. Despite trying as hard as she could, it was impossible not to revisit the time Brendan had gotten so angry that he punched a hole in their drywall. He'd never done anything like that before. She'd been so scared. Now that seemed kind of trivial. "You know I'd never hurt you," he'd said, and sounded so genuine. She believed him entirely, and nothing like it had ever happened since. Now she felt so stupid. Nina tried reminding herself that hindsight is 20/20, and that she had no way of knowing. But it didn't numb the sting of regret. They were sat in Brendan's car at an intersection across from some office buildings. They were home to everything from lawyers to art studios that were all strangely related to the neighborhood's endless gentrification. "Is that him?" Brendan asked her, pointing across the parking lot at Billy and breaking a silence that had lasted since leaving their home. She nodded, just barely. The fear had reduced her movements to simple flinches. "Is that him?" he asked again, this time with a significantly more aggressive inflection on each word. "Yes," Nina replied, failing to disguise her panic. "Do you remember what to say?" he asked with an air of condescension. She turned to him with a look that could have melted all of the ice on Lake Erie. It was loaded with hurt, betrayal, and anger. She knew what to say. Every single detail about this day would be perfectly preserved in her memory until the day she died. Brendan responded with a dismissive smile and pulled the car away in Billy's direction. All the dirty looks in the universe didn't matter to him. He knew he was in control, and it looked like he enjoyed it. It was like someone had abducted the man she loved and replaced him with a monster. They'd pulled up so Billy would walk past the passenger side where Nina was sitting. As she reached for the window controls, Brendan took her by the wrist. It didn't hurt, but she no longer felt the tenderness of the man she loved. "Don't do anything stupid," he said. "This doesn't have to get any worse. Once Tucker returns what he took, everything can go back to how it was." She couldn't believe he'd said it. Her fear of repercussion was the only thing that stopped her from laughing right at him. Nothing was ever going to be how it was. And as soon as she had an opening, Nina planned on running as far away from this man as she could. "Why don't you just go take it back?" she asked, suggesting as delicately as she could that he wasn't capable of it. Brendan's expression morphed into a smile that slowly pulled his lips apart and exposed his teeth. It was so deliberate, like he'd practiced it in front of a mirror. "Because it's no fun if I don't get to scare him," he said, and his words sent a frightful chill down her spine. Nina rolled down her window and began reciting the lines she'd been instructed to say. "Hey, Billy," she called. It was surprisingly easy for her to fake the pleasantries. Billy glanced at her, offered a polite but dismissive smile, then continued walking. Nina looked at Brendan for instruction. He rolled his eyes frustratedly, then flipped a switch on the dashboard. The police car let off a loud, high-pitched chirp that got Billy and everyone else in earshot's attention. Her old friend looked at the car, squinting as he tried to remember where he knew the face from before finally realizing who had called for him.
"Oh my God, Nina, I'm so sorry. I didn't recognize you with your hair down like that."
It hadn't occurred to her that she probably looked like an entirely different person wearing her hair like this. She rarely, if ever, set foot out into the world without tying it up first.
"This must be Brendan. I can't believe we've never met. I'm Billy."
Billy reached through the window, past Nina, and offered his hand to Brendan, who barely responded. He side-eyed the proposed greeting and then just resumed staring forward. Billy's brow furrowed in a briefly offended confusion that his perpetually pleasant demeanor forced him to quickly ignore, redirecting his attention back to Nina.
"What's up?" he asked. "You guys out here catching crooks?"
Billy laughed uncomfortably and made finger pistols. Nina smiled reassuringly in response. She'd never known Billy to have an angry bone in his body. Involving him in whatever this was made Nina's heart ache.
"Do you think you'll be seeing Tucker soon?"
she asked. Getting right to the point, she heard Brendan inhale sharply at the sound of her former boyfriend's name. Billy seemed to take note of it, too.
"Yeah, I think so. Why do you ask?"
Billy smiled, but there was an uneasy caution to it as he began to pick up on what was probably near palpable negativity flowing out of the vehicle. "It's really very important that you tell him to come see me as soon as he can," she said. Billy remained jovial, but was clearly becoming suspicious.
"I thought the point was to keep him out of your hair,"
Billy asked, referencing the conversation he'd had with her the night before. "We have a lot of unfinished business to discuss. I was just shocked to see him last night and didn't know what I was saying. I've had a night to think about it, and I'd appreciate it if you could tell him to stop by." She was improvising now. Nina couldn't believe how easily the words were rolling off of her tongue.
"You're sure?"
Billy asked. Then, as casually as she could, Nina brushed her obsidian curls behind her ear, exposing the red and purple contusions she'd suffered at Brendan's hands. Billy's reaction was visible, and Nina used every tool that silence afforded her to quell any further tells that might inform Brendan that she'd attempted some sort of signal. She didn't know what he was capable of. He kept saying he didn't want things to get any worse, but Nina could tell he was enjoying himself. "Billy, I'm sure," she said, emphasizing the words with a severity she hoped he would understand. "Can you tell him to come over as soon as possible? Please." There was no telling what he would do with the information that she'd given him. She hoped to God he wouldn't actually tell Tucker. She needed the police. Not a white knight whose last physical altercation was with a fence he drunkenly thought called him a pussy.
"Yeah, I can do that,"
Billy said. It sounded like he had more to say, but Brendan pulled the car away before she could even say goodbye. Chapter 30. Tucker. Thanks most likely to the inclusion of some rather potent inebriants, Tucker had spent the final 30 minutes of their walk to Billy's house mainlining facts about a supposed future these two men claimed to be from. His brain felt like a runaway carousel of thoughts he never wanted to get off of. When Franklin Castle eventually appeared in the distance, he longed for just a few extra blocks to hear more. Whether or not it was some elaborate fantasy, Tucker was entranced by the spectacle of it all. The last 15 minutes of his future history lesson had meandered around the details of World War III, something Tucker had, for a long time, felt could begin any day. Parker and Benj were in no way scholars, but he wasn't holding it against them. Pressed, he couldn't tell you all that much about World War II, outside of the crucial details. The war they'd described seemed to have been far more chaotic than the one that had preceded it. The Second World War had been taught as the Axis versus the Allies, with two sides. World War III, as Parker explained, was fought by multiple squabbling factions, with America not realizing it was no longer the world's only superpower until it was far too late, and its largest city had been reduced to rubble. "So New York's just gone?" Tucker asked intently. He spent a brief moment mentally exploring some of his favorite haunts dotted throughout the boroughs. Parker's eyes were wide with dilated pupils as he made the confirming sound of an explosion. Tucker wasn't what anyone would ever call an optimist, but he'd kind of hoped that the people of Earth would eventually get their shit together. As he heard more and more about what a horrible place the world was destined to become, he felt his heart drop a little. Dystopia aside, though, he thought it sounded better than Cleveland. It sounded like the kind of future that would let him fall through the cracks, where he could just disappear. And disappearing was something that greatly appealed to Tucker. They reached the house right as Parker was trying to branch off into a new tangent about how the post-war economy had affected his favorite bar. It occurred to Tucker that he'd never gotten an answer to his question about the sign language, but before he could steer the conversation back to it, someone interrupted Parker's most recent bout of verbal diarrhea.
"Jesus, you guys know that Halloween was last week, right?"
Stood on the edge of the porch stoop wearing nothing but flip-flops and cut-off sweatpants was Tank. All of his muscles were flexed and taut as he rocked back and forth on the balls of his feet, urgently puffing a cigarette. He looked absolutely miserable.
"Guys, this is Tank. He lives here," Tucker said with more than a slight hint of disappointment.
"Did he just call me a turd?" Parker asked. In the hazy place somewhere between downer and upper, Tucker couldn't quite tell if Parker was quaintly upset about Tank's comment, or just amused by the use of the word turd in a sentence.
"Yeah, what are you gonna do about it?"
Tank taunted before Tucker could reassure Parker that he shouldn't pay any attention.
"I'm gonna kill him,"
Parker announced nonchalantly, and then began marching across the yard.
"Parker!"
Benj and Tucker simultaneously called after him in the exact same frustrated tone.
It stopped him dead in his tracks, and he turned to look around at the two men quizzically.
"How often do you have to stop him from killing someone?" Tucker asked Benj.
"Honestly, this is kind of a new thing he's doing," he replied.
As Tank and Parker stared each other down and attempted to look menacing, Tucker thought about how much sense the comment about Halloween had made. There were several moments during the walk home he'd felt like someone was about to stop them and had been genuinely perplexed as to why they hadn't.
In the whirlwind of the past 24 hours, the date and how perfect of a cover story it was had slipped Tucker's mind. That didn't mean he thought Parker and Benj were fine to continue walking around in the gory ponchos they claimed were clothes. He needed to get them inside.
"Those real cigarettes?" Parker asked Tank.
He was several inches shorter than Tucker's new roommate, but was clearly trying to make himself look as big as possible.
"Why the fuck would I be smoking fake cigarettes?"
Tank replied with the condescension of an older brother. Parker narrowed his eyes in a way that would suggest he was having trouble coming up with a witty retort.
"Can I have one?"
he finally asked. It had barely taken any time at all, but Tank was already done with Parker.
"Big time, who the fuck is this guy, and why does he smell like a slaughterhouse?"
As Tucker turned away from Benj, the hood of his coat fell off of his head, giving Tank a good look at his face for the first time, while Parker and Benj looked so disgusting that costume was a person's reflexive reasoning for their appearance. Tucker just looked like a guy who had recently had the shit beat out of him.
"Oh fuck, what happened to you?"
Tank said, flinching like he could feel the bruises himself.
"Tank,
That's Parker. This is Benj. They're from the future. And he smells like that because he's covered in the blood of a drug dealer. I look like this because Parker nearly beat me to death earlier. He couldn't help but laugh a little as the words came out of him. Tank looked simply exhausted by this explanation, and was even more exasperated by Parker proudly posturing at the mention of his near-murderous explosion from earlier. He slowly shook his head from side to side, glaring disgustedly at all three of them as he pitched the cigarette butt into the empty planter and then silently walked inside. He couldn't tell if it was the drugs Parker had given him or if he was genuinely having fun, but Tucker noticed he felt significantly less shitty right then. He had no idea what was going on or who these strays he'd picked up really were, but he'd started to feel a lot better when he met them. Minus, of course, the beating he'd taken from Parker. But if the story they'd told him was true, Tucker was maybe willing to give the occasional violent outburst a pass.
"Did you see that?" Tucker heard Parker mutter to Benj. "I haven't seen a real cigarette since 72.
While it was all very likely a deep and dangerous shared delusion brought on by taking far too many of these pills, Tucker couldn't seem to stop his brain from whispering, "What if? What if this was all real? And what if he got to see it for himself?" Tucker didn't care if the future really was a capitalist hellscape or overrun by electricity-fearing cultists. It wasn't Cleveland, and his problems couldn't follow him across time and space. To Tucker, that sounded infinitely better than skipping town. He'd skip this entire era. He just had to figure out how to help Parker and Benj first. Unfortunately for Tucker, the only way to solve their problem would be to come clean about his encounter with Brendan. The crooked cop was somehow connected to them being in Cleveland. And whether it was a clandestine sci-fi cover-up or simply two lunatics locked in a shipping container, Brendan was the only lead for more information. Tucker's opinion of Parker had quickly and quite surprisingly changed since meeting him. Considering that someone might help you travel through time is an easy route to rebranding a near-death experience as overzealous roughhousing. He still thought the guy was unpredictable, though. There was no way of telling how he might react to finding out Tucker had danced over some facts earlier. He was equally as likely to high-five him for being brave as he was to break both of Tucker's legs. He needed to talk to Benj, and he needed to do it without Parker. A pleasant blast of warm air carrying the remnant scents of breakfast greeted Tucker as he led his new friends inside of Billy's home. Each of them let out an audible groan of relief to finally be out of the cold. Both men stared in awe at the home's interior like it was the first time they'd ever been inside. "I thought you said you guys have a house," Tucker asked. "Yeah," Parker replied absently as he picked up a framed vacation photo of Billy with his family. "But this place feels like someone actually gives a shit." Billy really had made the house feel like a home. There were pictures in frames on every wall. He'd picked out color schemes and bought plants that he'd managed to keep alive for more than a weekend. The carpets were so clean they made you want to take your shoes off. It made Tucker think about all the places he'd lived and how unattached he'd been to them. Maybe once in a while he'd throw a poster up on the wall, but they never felt like they were his. Not once did he ever expect a couch or bed to be leaving with him once he moved into a place. Those sorts of things were casualties of the way he lived. Tucker had a duffel bag full of clothes,
and that was the closest thing he'd had to a home for a very long time.
He directed Benj towards the kitchen, with instructions to help himself to food and drink while he got Parker set up with a shower and some clean clothes. As they walked through the hall towards the back of the house, Tucker gave Parker the lay of the land. His room, Tank's room, Billy's room, and the bathroom. To their surprise, they found the latter occupied. Slumped on the floor with one arm hanging lifelessly from the toilet, was a half-conscious girl who looked as though she'd been there for quite some time. They'd accidentally knocked her with the door as they'd opened it inwards, which stirred her from her slumber and brought the girl back to life. She squinted up at them through long, fake eyelashes that were barely attached anymore. The smeared makeup and tousled hair made her look like a raccoon that had dressed itself up like The Cure's Robert Smith. For a moment, she didn't seem to have any clue what was happening. Then her eyes focused and found herself staring up at two men who probably looked very, very frightening from her perspective. The girl started to scream, which for some reason prompted Parker to scream right back at her. The two noises meshed together to form a genuinely unpleasant symphony. Tucker cringed and plugged his ears, giving Parker a pained look. The girl scrambled on her hands and knees, crawling out of the bathroom between them as Parker's voice cracked into an all-out laughter. Her high heels clapped across the floor, still strapped to her ankles, but not entirely on her feet.
"Sorry, I forgot she was here,"
Tank said, appearing in the doorway now wearing just the towel.
Every part of Tucker believed him. He shook his head at Parker as his laughter ran out of steam.
Did you enjoy that? Was that funny? Tucker asked sarcastically.
That was hilarious, Parker replied.
Tucker got Parker situated in the bathroom, and then returned to the kitchen where he found Benj pouring a relatively healthy amount of some clear spirit into a pint glass. Benj wore a very caught red-handed look. But what did Tucker care? None of it was his, and he wasn't planning on being here long enough to get told off for it.
I don't think we got anything for you to mix that with, man,
Tucker cautioned. Benj just smiled as he put the cork back in the bottle.
Oh, it's fine. I'll make do, he said politely.
Tucker thought about questioning it, but he remembered he had more pressing things to discuss and took a seat at the kitchen table.
What was all that noise? Benj asked.
Oh, it looks like Tank had a friend sleep over. I think we scared her. Benj laughed. He sounded tired.
What kind of name is Tank?
Tucker paused and considered the question for a moment.
It's the kind of name an insecure asshole gives himself, he said.
He'd expected Benj to laugh in reply, but instead he just stared at him curiously.
You don't actually live here, do you, Tucker?
Tucker had pegged him as the smart one, but Benj continually surprised him with how much care he took with his observations.
No, he admitted. I just got back into town last night.
Benj cocked his head slightly, indicating that he was listening, and then joined Tucker at the table with what looked like 5 ounces of liquor.
I've been living in New York. I ran out of money and had to come home. These people are giving me a place to stay while I figure things out.
Benj's eyes seemed to light up at the mention of New York.
New York City? Seriously? What's it like? I've only ever read about it.
Even with Tucker deciding he would buy the time traveler angle, comments like that still seemed impossible.
It's amazing. There's nowhere like it. But I need to talk to you about something else. About that warehouse where I found you guys.
A defined disappointment followed the deviation away from the topic of New York City. But right then, that apparently doomed city wasn't important.
Look, I wasn't entirely honest with you about why I was there.
Benj's eyes narrowed as the childlike excitement drained out of him. He began listening intently.
There's this guy. This cop. He's my ex-girlfriend's new boyfriend.
Tucker rolled his eyes at the mention of their relationship and then reached into his pocket as he continued. Earlier today, he roughed me up and left me stranded on the east side. While that was happening, I stole his wallet and his phone. Tucker placed the itinerant storage business card onto the table, along with the key and the phone. I figured I might be able to steal whatever he had in a storage locker. It was a shitty thing to do, but the guy's a real prick. Like, he's kind of crazy.
As Tucker went about justifying his reasons for robbing the cop, he noticed that Benj was no longer looking at him. He was looking at the phone, and he looked terrified.
What? Tucker asked. They don't got Android phones in the future?
Benj reached inside his jacket and then placed his own phone down next to the one Tucker had stolen from Brendan. Save for the battle damage Benj's seemed to have sustained, they were identical. From the size to the shape, all the way down to the golden edging.
This isn't...
All it took was eye contact with Benj for Tucker's mind to connect all the dots. Just as Benj began to slowly nod in confirmation, they were distracted by the sound of the front door bursting open and someone loudly panting, trying to catch their breath.
Tucker! Tucker, are you here? Tucker!
Billy's voice yelled from the hallway foyer before he appeared around the kitchen door, looking like he'd seen a ghost. Tucker was curious why he'd seemed so shaken. He hadn't even met Parker or Benj yet.
For the briefest of moments, Billy examined the bloody young man sat at his kitchen table before turning his attention back to Tucker.
Tucker! It's Nina! I think Brendan's gonna hurt her!
Before Billy had even finished his sentence, Benj leapt up from his seat, spilling his drink and catapulting his chair across the floor.
The three men stared at each other with bewildered looks painted across their faces, before Benj finally broke the silence.
What the fuck is happening here?
Chapter 31. Parker. The warm water hit his face, and Parker briefly felt his soul separate from his body. He'd never felt water quite like this before. Everything from the pressure to the temperature was otherworldly, and he'd taken showers in high-rises. Those places were supposed to be luxurious, but this made them feel like a solar shower in the middle of Death Valley. It made a Las Vegas shower feel like getting pissed on by a well-hydrated alcoholic. His body felt awful to touch. His clothes had been starting to feel like a second skin and were excruciating to take off. 4 days of dried blood and sweat clung so tightly to the hair on his chest and legs that patches ripped out from the root as he peeled the filthy fabric away from his skin. He rescued the remaining pills left in his jeans pockets, safely setting them aside before throwing all of his clothes into a black trash bag. They were disgusting and needed to be thrown away, but he was really going to miss that jacket. The past couple of days had been a real battle, but he was still surprised by the number of tiny cuts he'd somehow acquired. It seemed like every time he moved, the water found its way into a new untouched slice in his skin that shot a bolt of pain through his body. He lowered his head into the water and watched the flakes of blood and skin swirl around the bottom of the drain as he tried to run his fingers through his hair. It was a tangled and matted mess that would need something more substantial than just warm water and elbow grease to clean. Parker looked for something to wash it with, but only found the shower stocked with brightly colored bottles he didn't recognize. Each of the mysterious liquids seemed like it served its own specific bathing purpose, but words like swagger and volcano didn't tell him anything about what they did. "What happened to plain old soap?" he complained aloud to himself. Parker's brain twisted around the paradox of his comment. He traveled 50 years backwards in time and was struggling with the advanced technologies of the past. The future really was bullshit. He eventually settled on something with the word relax written across the front of the bottle, and squeezed the pearlescent green gel into the palm of his hand. It smelled like the women's bathroom at Rusty's, which he was familiar with thanks to it having the only bathroom stall at Night Bar with a door and a toilet seat. Jesus Christ, even Nina had regular soap. His fists clenched. It was turning into a reflex every time she crossed his mind, which, despite still happening every couple of minutes, had thankfully diminished. It had gone from being a constant loop of the past few moments he saw her alive to strobing barrages prompted by her name. Parker knew what people said about him, how he held her back and damaged her career, that she should run as fast as she could from him because he'd eventually ruin her life. Well, congratulations, he thought. You were all fucking right. He hadn't just ruined it. He'd ended it. Parker hated himself, and felt like he would until the day he died too. What he hated so much was that it seemed like things were beginning to look up for him. Nina was dead, and here he was, lathering himself up with soft water in a world that was still just mulling over the apocalyptic possibilities of the future to come. That future had been his home, and somehow he'd escaped it. It was at a cost he would never have been willing to pay given the option. He didn't deserve a better life. She did. And Parker would have gladly spent the rest of his days camped on the radioactive shores of the Hudson River if he could have just kept her safe. He would have happily sustained himself on three-eyed fish and rotting murder boars if he just knew that she would be okay. But nobody gave him the fucking choice. The feeling of his fingernails digging into his palms eventually interrupted Parker's meandering thoughts, and he unclenched his fists, finally massaging the green gel into his hair. The soap stung the cuts on his knuckles, but as the knots started to loosen, he noticed that it really did feel relaxing. He wondered how long he could stay in there before someone would come to get him. When he finally decided he was clean, Parker got out of the shower and examined the clothes that Tucker had left for him. They weren't exactly his style, but he was definitely in a beggars-can't-be-choosers situation. The jeans were too baggy, and the shirt felt like it was ready to fall apart. Printed on the front was a black and white picture of an ugly guy with a receding hairline and a thin mustache. Written across his forehead were the words, 100,000 leagues under my nutsack, a phrase which made Parker shake his head disapprovingly. That's not even clever, he muttered as he pulled the shirt over his head. At least it was clean. The old fabric clung awkwardly to his damp skin as he wiped the fog from the mirror and gazed at himself. Even without the dirt, Parker didn't like what he saw and decided he wanted to change it. Thankfully, certain bathroom items were universal. He didn't need a translator to tell him what a razor, scissors, or shaving foam were. And with a certain degree of panic, Parker went about making himself look as different as he could with the tools that he had. As he hacked at his hair, Parker thought about what they were supposed to do next. A couple of hours ago, all he'd wanted to do was to fix the device, then run to his death trying to fistfight monsters. But then he took a shower and realized that repairing a time machine wasn't something that him or Benj was capable of. Sure, somebody in Cleveland knew something about it. Itinerant had a whole warehouse there. There was a person or group of people somewhere in that city who knew all about the device. Maybe they knew how to fix it and how to get him and Benj home. In the calming trance of this physical change, Parker wondered whether or not that was what he wanted.
There wasn't very much waiting for them back in Las Vegas, except the consequences of the past few days.
Their lives had begun imploding as soon as they started screwing with the device. It had cost him so much, and now the only thing Parker had left was Benj. He wasn't about to set off on some ridiculous crusade to go somewhere he didn't want to be, especially if it might cost him the only other person in all reality that he actually cared about. Parker was clean-shaven when he was finished, and the rat's nest of hair that had hovered around his earlobes was reduced to stubble. It wasn't a look he'd ever sported before, and that's what he liked about it. He couldn't wait to see the look on Benj's face when he saw it. Parker gave himself a few playful slaps across the face and tried to psych himself up for going out to tell his friend that he thought they should stay, to see if they could make life work for them there in Cleveland, at least until the earthquakes. He opened the door and watched steam billow out around him as if he was walking out of some government lab. The house still felt warm, but a breeze from the central air sent a pleasant cooling sensation across his new bare skin. He walked down the hallway towards the kitchen and browsed at the pictures that dotted the walls. There were vacations, parties, holidays. Strangely, none of them had Tucker or that tank guy in them. Most of the pictures were of some pudgy guy who seemed like he was having the best possible time.
"What an asshole," Parker muttered, looking at a photo of the guy wearing a comically oversized sombrero and a t-shirt that said, "Yo quiero más shots." Next to it was a group picture from a Christmas party. It looked much older, but the same guy was there, looking almost exactly the same. Apparently, he'd looked 38 his entire life. Parker had met people like that before. Benj's dad had been 39 when he passed, but he hadn't looked a day older than 22. Everyone in the photo was dressed for the occasion. Ugly sweaters, big red bows, and those awfully tacky antler headbands. It was an old kind of Christmas, the kind that Parker had read about. Nothing like the ones he'd grown up with. Next to the guy was a woman blowing a kiss to the camera who caught Parker's attention. She had immaculate cinnamon skin, raven black curls tied up into a tight bun, and for some reason he couldn't stop staring at her. There was a tingling sensation in his sinuses, preceding tears that blurred his vision. He felt the pain of his fingernails digging into his palm again as his fist clenched tighter and tighter. Parker ripped the picture off of the wall and smashed the frame against a small dresser that stood in the hallway. He dusted the pieces of glass aside to retrieve the photo and brought it up to his eyes again. There was no mistake. He could have picked her out in a crowd of millions. Somehow, in a photograph taken a quarter of a century before she was born, Parker was looking at Nina. His Nina. The Nina he'd watched die.
"Tucker!"
Parker screamed as he ran for the kitchen. He saw three men in the room. Tucker was sat at the table with Benj opposite him, backed up against the wall. Stood in the center of the kitchen was the short, round man he'd seen in the photos. "Mr. Yo quiero más shots."
"You!"
Parker growled. Then before anyone else in the room could react, he had the guy pinned up against the wall by his collar, little stubby legs kicking beneath him, trying to find purchase on the ground.
"Who are you?" Parker screamed at him. "I swear to God I will kill you right here."
The rest of the kitchen erupted into shouts as the two other men jumped to pull Parker off of the man who was pleading for him to stop. But Parker had no intention of stopping. Parker was going to choke that man until he felt satisfied. At least, that's what he thought. Until he felt Tank's forearm stretch across his throat and begin choking the life out of him.
Artwork for Life Without Consequence was provided by Daniel Sewell. You can find him on Twitter at writerDanSewell. That's DanSoule. Music for this episode was provided by me, Davey Francis. You can find more of my music and access to the Life Without Consequence Patreon at DaveyFrancis.com.